This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
Today, it's really more focused on standard of care, what's the state of art, and we're not going to delve too much into the research we do here in prostate cancer, which is extensive, but I thought it'd be good to have at least one talk on clinical trials because that's what I do a lot of. We get a lot of questions from patients, and I think it could be helpful just to kind of inform the overall agenda for today. So, you know, one of the things we mentioned already that's critical, you know, UCSF, I'm proud to be part of a program that's really been, critical to the development of many important treatments and diagnostic agents in prostate cancer. And this is not hyperbole. You know, UCSF's been at the forefront with syphilis LT or Provenj, abiraterone, Eric mentioned that, apalutamide, with both diagnostic PSMA PET imaging as well as the radioligands like Pluvicto, and more to come. And so the research funding we get from the federal agencies as well as from PCF and other philanthropy is super important to us to be able to continue to advance this mission. As John mentioned, increasingly our clinical trials are not one size fits all, and that's appropriate. And increasingly it's the genetics and genomics. What is an individual patient's genotype in the tumor, and what DNA do they inherit from their parents? And those things really inform truly what trials I'm considering for a patient in front of me. In our molecular oncology program, we might have 10 different clinical trials, all with very specific subsets across patients with different types of cancers, whether it be prostate or breast or lung cancer. We know that those cancers might behave similarly and respond similarly to certain targeted therapies. And that's really the way we think about enrollment in 2025. BRCA2 and the PARP inhibitor is obviously not a new thing, but that's a great example of a clinical trials and development of a medicine in specific groups of patients to really maximize the benefit for those patients. Phases of clinical trials, I think a lot of patients ask me, well, what phase of a trial am I joining? Really, the phases refer to the drug and where the drug is in development. And so we have classically phase 1, you're learning about the drug, what are the side effects, what's the right dose to use. Phase 2 is what we call proof of concept. Is there enough activity? Is the PSA going down? Are tumors shrinking on a scan? Is the drug tolerated well? Is it metabolized well enough for us to really make that what we call go, no go decision? Say, we're going to launch a multiple year, very expensive phase 3 study, which is your classic, let's compare our new drug alone or in combination with whatever is the standard of care. That's difficult sometimes in the context of a rapidly changing treatment landscape to know what's the right comparator, but we do our best. And we get a lot of guidance from IRB, from the FDA to really design these studies in the right way. I will say that this classic paradigm is changing. Increasingly, we go straight from phase 1 to phase 3, and phase 1 studies can now be 200, 300 patients big when a drug shows a lot of promise. There's a lot of excitement. We want to enroll patients. We want to treat them. We want to give the best therapies possible. And so we're part of phase 1 studies that can be very large, but for good reason when we're seeing really promising activity. So what are a couple of myths? One, I hear a lot about placebo. I don't want to be on a placebo. It turns out that very few oncology trials actually are straight placebo, where you're going to be flip of the coin. Either you get the drug or you get a placebo. There's actually very few trials that fall in that category. If there's a placebo involved, which is less than 10% of the time, usually it's an additive approach. There's a standard of care, and then we're going to test whether a drug adds to that standard of care versus placebo plus standard of care. Very rare to have a trial that's just straight drug versus placebo. Vast majority of the trials that we open at UCSF aren't even in that category, and patients go on. Most of the time, they're getting the drug. Of course, we don't know how well it's going to work, but that's what we're learning as we go. We definitely consider trials at every stage of the disease. You know, when I'm seeing patients in clinic, I look at all the options that are available to me, the standard of care, as well as the clinical trial options. And let's decide together, what's the best option at this stage? When we go through all the standard of care and then consider a trial, I think that we're really compromising what could be the best outcomes for the patients. And there's good data to support that. Patients that go on clinical trials generally have better outcomes. You know, there's, of course, many factors that go into that, but clearly it's important to consider these at all stages of the disease. We'll talk about the hazard ratio thing that Eric mentioned. And I hear a lot from patients, well, drug X is only going to give me 3 months median improvement. You hear that a lot when you see articles in New York Times and lay media, this is how studies are reported. But that's a population statistic. That's giving you an average for the study as a whole. Of course, you're an individual patient. And the point estimate of the median improvement can really grossly under or overestimate the benefit of the drug. So really, it's important to look at the hazard ratio, which the simple way is, as Eric said, can you drive a Mack truck through those curves? The larger the space and separation, the greater the hazard ratio is going to be. And to put it in the lay terms, let's say I have a hazard ratio of 0.6, drug is effective. If you take 1 minus that number, 0.4, that means there's a 40% improvement in our drug versus standard of care with whatever the primary outcome is, whether it be overall survival, progression-free survival. So I really encourage you, you know, to be an informed consumer of scientific data, clinical trial data, whether it be in oncology or in any field, really focus on the hazard ratio. That's certainly what the FDA does when they approve or disapprove drug application. Other questions I hear, I think we covered this one. No, we definitely want to consider trials at all stages and really think about all the list of options that are available. Costs of a trial are not trivial, and we really try our best to maximize the amount of financial support we get from company sponsors. And I think there's more and more of a push to try to cover many of those items. We try to do insurance authorization and really make sure we're only billing patients for what we would consider to be the standard of care. Really trying to push sponsors to say, hey, even though a drug standard of care for the setting, really think it's important that you provide it for patients. So we're really advocating. We have a lot of kind of high level agreements with a lot of pharmaceutical sponsors, but there's certainly still more work to be done there. Making our patient population in trials representative of the patients we see in California. We have a 25 county catchment area that spans a huge swath of California, way up north to the Central Valley, to many rural areas. And how can we expand our reach and really make sure our patients enrolled on our trials are representative? Want to call out Trial Library. This was a company that was founded by one of our medical oncologists here at UCSF, Hella Borno, that really is trying to get increased access to trials for patients that otherwise may not be seen at places like UCSF. Clinical trial matching tool, we're really proud to have rolled this out a couple of years ago as a really way to be comprehensive and really allow providers and patients to really search on a more granular level what trials are patients potentially eligible for. And the last thing I'll mention is just our affiliate partner sites throughout the broader Bay Area. This is something we're really actively focused on in the East Bay, South Bay Peninsula, North Bay, increasingly getting trials out to patients rather than making everyone come here to San Francisco, recognizing the challenges of traffic and parking and so forth. What do we decide to open here at UCSF? It really comes down to patient impact. What do we think of the drugs that are the most likely to benefit patients? What responds to the needs of our catchment area? What's innovative? Is this study design something that we can really buy into? And can we enroll patients? It does no good to open studies that we just don't have the patient population for. I will say one thing, that not all clinical trials are those that pharmaceutical companies want to sponsor. And this is where the federal funding piece and other foundational support makes such a difference. You know, novel combinations where you're taking agents that might be owned by different companies. De-intensification of treatment, giving less treatment and achieving the same level of outcome, something that, of course, pharmaceutical companies may not be as incentivized. Really focusing on the subgroups that are most likely to benefit. Again, you're shrinking the pie potentially, but you're maximizing the benefit for those patients. Those trials are critical for us to really advance the field.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.